Hey, welcome to the Upland Nation podcast. Scott Linden here from the Cabela's podcast studio. Hope you're having a great summer. Yeah, well, I guess not officially yet, but for all intents and purposes, we've already lived through some of the highlights, I guess, if you will, from hailstorms to flooding to hot weather and back to snow. That's the way it goes around here, maybe for you too as well. So the best news, I guess, our comrade governor is loosening the strings just a little bit more. We are allowed to camp in a few Forest Service campgrounds, and with luck, we'll also be able to hit some of the state parks within a few days. More to come on that. Fishing is picking up, and as usual, the dog training is red hot and rolling here at the Upland Nation, the podcast that promises not to waste your time or insult your intelligence while giving you information that you can probably use, at least I hope so, whether it's public access, hunting strategies and dog handling advice, tips and tactics. We're going to cover a lot of that today, but doing things a little bit different today for a whole bunch of reasons. The first is, had so much interest in this topic, and then poof, you know what they say, karma, kismet, whatever it is, coincidence. Just got an assignment to write a magazine article about the topic as well, and had just put on our weekly Upland Nation newsletter a poll on what your biggest challenges are when it comes to hunting. And while the poll is just current now, so if you get the newsletter, great. Don't forget to take the poll. It's only four questions and it's multiple choice, so it's only really one question. But the top of the list has always been, over the course of 7 or 8 or 9 years of surveying television viewers, the biggest challenge is finding places to hunt. So we'll be talking about that as well in great detail in a slightly different format. I'll be answering a few questions from you guys and gals, but I'll also be doing a bit of a monologue, I guess, and trying to share with you the stuff that I learned and continue to learn after a 30-year career of hunting public ground in, let's see, the last time I counted, 26 different states. So we'll get to that and a whole bunch more, including an update on Flick's progress while you're pondering your own dog's progress. And I am telling you about two of our sponsors who give us the time and the resources to bring you this podcast. First on the list, Sage Endbreaker Mercantile. Gun care products crafted at the highest caliber. Right now, the good news is all of those gun cleaning mats that were sold out for quite a while are now back in stock. So if you're looking for one for yourself and for your heirs, because that's how long they will last, go to sageandbreaker.com. And also Dogtra. Their website address is dogtra.com. They got some bundle sales going on right now with some freebies attached to the packages. I am using their T&B dual collar system for a lot of Flicks training, and it seems to be having its desired effect. Well, that's what I'm going to talk about first, dog training, and if this helps you, I'm glad for it. If it doesn't help you, why don't you drop me a note at the Wing Shooting USA Facebook page or the Upland Nation Facebook page, and I'll try and address your issues as well. But right now, we're to the point that we are putting pressure on Flick's flank. I am putting pressure on Flick's flank via both a check cord with the half hitch like the Smith cousins use, and then also translating that now to a collar, an e-collar around his flank. It's almost too small. The guy's growing up fast, but it's working very well. Right now, it's simply a matter of reminding him that touching on the flank, a little pressure on the flank, means stop. Do not pass go. Do not pick up any dog biscuits or anything else. And we're using that primarily for one thing and one thing only right now, and that is stopping when he sees a bird. A bird sitting on the ground, a bird perched on a tree, it doesn't matter. That's the one weak spot he's got in his steadiness routine. And so we're getting there. In fact, earlier today, I was walking him from my office to the front yard of the house, and there were three of my practice pigeons sitting in the driveway. First thing he did when he came out of the door was slam on the brakes. He didn't even have his flank collar on then. So good boy, Flick. Good boy. All right, enough about all of that. Let's see here. Let's get to this whole public access thing. I got about a dozen tips. I don't know if I'll get to all of them, but I'll do my best to cover them. If I don't cover them here, at some point they'll end up at my new website, findbirdhuntingspots.com. And in the meanwhile, watch for it later this summer as a magazine article in Upland Almanac. So if you're not a subscriber yet, you might want to consider becoming one. And do everybody a favor and send cash. No, send whatever you like. So anyway, like I said, I love research. I do it all the time, whether it's looking for new places to hunt or writing about new places to hunt or places I want to hunt. And it finally paid off in any number of ways. Last season, I spent the entire hunting season visiting places I'd never been before, hunting birds that I'd never seen before, at least I don't think so. Some of them look the same, but they're different birds. But had a great time doing it, and it prompted a whole bunch of thoughts in that arena, and some of those thoughts are the same ones that you have probably. So if you can relate, good for you. Maybe you'll learn something from all of this. The first thing, and this was pointed out by a podcast listener a while back, we got to use it or lose it when it comes to public access. Yeah, the bureaucrats are pretty good about keeping records. They may not be accurate all the time, but at least they're trying their best to figure out who's using publicly accessible land and how often. So make your presence known in one way or another. The best way, of course, is to just reach out to those agencies that administer that stuff and tell them that you're using it and that you appreciate their managing it for us. Because in this era of declining budgets and massive demand for, you know, squeaky wheels everywhere and only so much grease to go around, they're going to put it where the squeaks are loudest. So let's be one of those. Let's be the squeakers and give them some positive feedback. But beyond the use it or lose it thing, there's a whole bunch of other great reasons to consider publicly accessible land. And I'll get into it later. I hope to get into the types of public access that are out there and even some states that I really like and why I like them. So don't go away, no matter how boring I might appear at this very moment. I'll get to something that I bet is going to be of value to you somewhere in these 12 tips and a list of places to go. Wild birds. That's generally all there is on these public access, whether you call it walk-in or block management or public land open to sportsmen, whatever each state calls it, those are generally wild bird fields, forests, sloughs, and draws. If you love wild birds, you probably already know that, but if you don't know enough about where to find wild birds these days, that is your first step. Identify some public access ground. There's a whole bunch of it. Millions and millions. I'll give you one example. Here on South Dakota, one of my favorite places for a bunch of reasons. The people are great. The hunting is incredible. And one of the reasons is there's 124,000 acres of public access ground within 60 minutes of downtown here on South Dakota. The same is true in all sorts of other states and all sorts of other towns throughout bird country. So take advantage of it. And remember, the price is right. Usually the cost of a hunting license is all it takes to get your feet on the ground in public access territory from Washington to Texas. Yeah, Texas as well. And I'll hopefully address some of that in a minute or 20 minutes or something like that. But anyway, take advantage of it. This land is your land. And thanks to public access programs of one sort or another, it's even more your land, even if it's private, because a lot of it is. A lot of private landowners have bought into this concept of improving their habitat in exchange for, some sort of consideration from a public wildlife management agency. I'm not going to go deep into that, but the fact of the matter is that without private ground, most of this walk-in country would probably just dry up and blow away. All right, so let's get practical for a while here. This is public access and how to take advantage of it. Let's exploit some of these walk-in places that we all have access to throughout the United States. Number one, plan ahead. I was working on that today. In fact, I just did a video, and as part of that, mentioned once again that most states who have formal walk-in programs have an atlas of some sort, a book full of maps, hard copy, and then most of them put it online in one way, shape, or form. And then some of them even have an app for your mobile phone. So dig into all of that. The simplest way to do it is just like everything else. Google walk-in hunting in the state you want to go to. Couple more clicks and your mouse will put you right on that map. I carry the hard copy as well as the online versions no matter where I'm going. And remember this as well. They usually update that list, you know, because they're making deals with landowners up until August sometimes. And so you want to get the updates in whatever format they're available. Sometimes places flood. Sometimes they burn. Sometimes the crops haven't been harvested yet or may not be harvested, or that ground was turned into a bare field. So get the updates. Spend a lot of time studying those maps in relation to your home base town or city or wherever you're going to park yourself for the hunting trip. Consider concentrating a whole bunch of areas each time you go out for the day. For example, I'm going to go north of town and I'm going to identify three or four places within a few miles of each other just in case I get to the first one and boom, the road is closed. Or, as happened in Mitchell, South Dakota, the bridge washed out. Another time, I was the second guy to that wildlife area, so I didn't want to horn in on the other guy's chances, so I went somewhere else. If you're spending all your time looking for those places instead of going there and hunting, well, you know, daylight is very expensive in the fall, so consider instead putting that map list together, if you will, before you head out. Find a concentration. And then look for the good stuff. I often will scout the night before because no matter how good Google Maps and Google Earth are or the description in the atlas is, sometimes something goes sideways. Saved myself a lot of wet feet last year in South Dakota. Maybe you experienced some of that. I did too. Was knee deep in a couple spots, but that was another story for another time. If you have the chance, maybe on the way home or way back to your hotel or your camp at the end of the day, make a swing past the places you're hoping to go tomorrow. I got a first question here. This is from our Facebook friend, David Kuritsky. David, I hope you're doing well, and let's go hunting again together someday. David asks a pretty practical question, and I had a hard time answering it, actually. He asks, do you choose the state or the species first when you're going to a new place? And the answer is it depends. Sometimes I want to go for a certain kind of bird. For example, a couple, 3 years ago, I did a real serious study on sharp-tailed grouse. So I looked for places that had a lot of sharpies and had a lot of public access. And you can imagine where I went. Yes, I did. And then I narrowed it down. But sometimes it's just, I'm not keeping a bucket list. I'm not one of those slam kind of guys. I don't really care about that kind of stuff. But sometimes I would like to go to a state and particular because I like something about it, or I have a friend there, or whatever it is, or I'm just passing through and it's convenient. So I'll do one or the other or both. And sometimes when I'm free, I will just look at the weather. What's the 10-day forecast for that place versus that place? I did it last weekend for a fishing trip. I'll probably do it at least once or twice this year for a hunting trip. So it depends on what you're looking for. And that's before you count who you might run into there or who you might invite along. So there's your answer, David. Probably not the one you wanted, but at least I hope it helps you. And I know you're going to put another sticker on the back of that truck this year, so maybe we can do that together somewhere in between. Another thing that I always do is I always contact the agency that administers these walk-in programs or public land, or the agencies, because a lot of times, and I'll talk more about that later as well, a lot of times there's a whole bunch of administrators because there's a whole bunch of types of public access land. I'll reach out and talk with the biologist for the area, maybe the game wardens, the conservation officers, whatever it is. And they might save you, you know, a trip to a place that has been plowed over, for example. Sometimes chambers of commerce or visitors bureaus can do the same thing, especially in bird country where they understand the economic value of people like us. The chambers are often a clearinghouse for information. And for private landowners not enrolled in any of the programs, who are more than willing to give you access if you're a nice guy and you promise to be on your best behavior. I got to tell you a great story about that sort of thing. I'd been hunting a lot of public access ground in a certain county in a certain state where a lot of ringneck pheasants live. And so I pull up to one of those classic section line four-way stops, and there's a guy on the right of me, and he's got a dog trailer, and I know life is tough when you're pulling anything, so I wave him through first, and he waves me through, and we do that three or four times, and we're both laughing our heads off, so I shut off the engine. I walk across the intersection and just start talking with me. He asked me what I've been doing. I said, well, I hunted here and here and here and here on the Atlas, and he says, well, where are you going now? I said, well, the next one on the list. It's about a mile down the road. It's over there. Here's where it is. He says, hold it. Why don't you just stop right here and hunt that corner? I said, well, it says no trespassing. It's private property. You know, I can prove it. It's right on. He says, yeah, it's mine. Then he introduced me to the pro baseball player riding shotgun and then to his dogs. And 15 minutes later, we were chasing a black pheasant through the shelter belt after first thinking it was a skunk and pulling flick off. We chased it down one more time and got another solid point. I walked in and flushed it. Somebody else shot it, but I consider that a minor victory. And just another good reason to have a list and to exploit the maps that you get from each of those counties. It was incredible, and it only happens when, number one, you're nice and you live by the golden rule, and number two, you're a little bit creative and a little bit flexible. Now, in many states, you don't have to bother with this, but in some states, and in some states where the best land is available, you'll also need to register, sign up, get permission, whatever you want to call it. In particular, I'm thinking of Montana, which has a great block management program. That's what they call it, their Block Management Access, I think, BMA. They'll send you out their atlas, and you'll look at the map, and you'll look at the spot, and then you'll look up that spot in the back by number, and then it'll say it has sharp tails and white tails and whatever else. And then it'll tell you whether you need to get written permission from the landowner, you need to call them in advance, you need to sign in at a kiosk, or you can just pull over and hunt. And I've done all four of those over the years, and they've all paid off. Sometimes they pay off well, and sometimes they pay off in that I know I'll never go back there. And that's okay too, isn't it? You know, I think we all keep two lists. One is the places we'll come back to, and the other is the places we'll never set foot on again. So it works both ways. Just be what would I call it? Be grateful that we even have the access. All right. So another thing I might suggest to you is that size isn't everything. Now, I'm not talking about that. Don't go there. I mean the size of the parcel. I'll give you a perfect example. I was going from section to section. If you notice, you know, 640 acres, a square mile. That's quite often how these public access places are delineated. On the way kind of back to town, there was one little tiny, I don't even think it was a quarter section. So it was, let's just call it 100 acres. I would bet most people drove past it on the way to someplace they thought might be better. But instead, I pulled into the little parking place, which only had room for my truck and one other truck with a flatbed on it, where the guy was loading his excavator back onto the flatbed. Yeah. His truck had a Pheasants Forever logo on it. Turns out he was a biologist doing a little bit of habitat work there. I got the dog out. We walked some of that country. It was kind of a miniature, kind of a textbook miniature example of all sorts of habitats, and I'm not surprised if Pheasants Forever is working on it. It had everything from shelter belts to actually a little water. We only jumped two birds. Flick gave me a point on the second one, which was kind of hemmed in by the steep banks of a trickle of water that must have been 8 inches wide, and the hemmed in banks were another 12 inches tall. Killed one bird in an hour. I think I'll stop back there again next time I'm in that county, in that state. So be creative about that sort of thing. Okay, I told you about scouting. One more strong recommendation for that. I told you about picking alternate areas. And then I've really had a great experience with the people I meet. Now, maybe if you're a big game hunter, you've had a sour encounter or two or 10, and even bird hunters have probably had some of those. I guess I'm just lucky once in a while. Any number of times in the last three or four seasons, I've been 150 to 300 to 500 yards away from the parking place or the road and seen a vehicle drive up, slow down, look at me, I look at them, we wave to each other. And if all the conditions are right, instead of just waving and turning away, I'll beckon them over. And I did this a couple times last year. One time it was a guy that turns out was in the same RV park as I was, looking for a place to go. He recognized my dog. I recognized him eventually, and we hunted the rest of the day together. And I don't know about you, but I like solitude, but I also like company when it's the right kind in the right place. And it was about that time of day. And, you ever done that? You ever just invited a stranger along? It's astounding what you might learn. And again, if nothing else, you might learn that you never need to, hang out with that guy or gal again. We finished that day mid-afternoon, and as we're walking back to the trucks, here comes another truck. This guy slows down, stops right in front of us. We walk over, being nice guys, and he says, "How you doing?" And said the same thing. "How you doing?" He said, "Oh, we're doing great. Did you hunt that spot over there?" "Yeah, we did. He killed a bird there, or missed a bird there." He says, "How about that spot over there across the road?" "Nope, private." He says, "Yeah, let's go." I said, "I don't know." He says, "It's mine." Killed another bird on the top of a knoll over there. You just never know. Maybe bird hunters are just that way. It was spectacular. And I'm going back to visit with him again this year. Okay, we're just getting warmed up here. I got one more comment from the Facebook page. Donnie Brown, loves to hunt birds, considers himself an expert, but he wants to try chuckers. And Donnie, I'm going to give you a chucker spot right now. It's right there. Oh, that's right. You can't see that map, can you? I'm sorry about that. No, let me do that. You know, I'm not going to give you the latitude and longitude, but you know, the whole idea of findbirdhuntingspots.com is to help you find places to go so that you continue to hunt, or you become a hunter and you buy your guns and ammo and pay your excise taxes through your manufacturer relationship. That is what supports conservation. So Donnie, next time you're out west, head for Winnemucca, Nevada. Stand in the middle of town and look in any direction. All that public ground is yours for the taking. No permission required. All you need is a hunting license and a good pair of boots. Maybe a good dog. I got more to share with you as we just get rolling here on the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, your host, and hopefully sharing some stuff with you that you might enjoy, that might be of value to you, that will help you access public ground. More of that to come, and a dog training and dog, well, I guess I'll call it a hunting tip, coming up right after this brief intermission for some commercial messages. The first for Dr. Tim's Performance Dog Food, DRTIMS.com, is where you learn more about all the formulations, everything from the highest performance dog to the couch potato. Dr. Tim Hunt has got something for everybody. And I've got something for you. 30% off your first order. Just use the code UPLANDNATION at checkout. Tim is a veterinarian. He's a sled dog racer. He knows that functional ingredients are most important. We've talked about protein. We've talked about some of the other vitamins. But also prebiotics like chicory root and psyllium that help feed the healthy bacteria of your dog's colon. You know, that becomes an issue, especially on the road, whether you're hunting at a high-end lodge or some free public ground in the middle of nowhere. Your dog and his gut will only act up when you least expect it. So check out all the options at drtims.com. Don't forget that 30% discount. And then ESP, Electronic Shooters Protection. His website is espamerica.com. I went out and tried a new gun last Sunday at a new Sporting Clays course. Keep up the good work, everybody, at the Redmond Rod and Gun Club. It's beautiful and all volunteer, so appreciate your help, guys. I asked everyone on my squad if they wore their hearing protection in the field. And unfortunately, all three of them said, "What?" And it wasn't because they were confused. It was because they couldn't hear me. No, just joking. But none of them are wearing their hearing protection in the field. And they all had different reasons. I used to as well. Now I have custom fit, stay in your ear, infinitely adjustable ESP hearing protection devices. Digital, fit great, waterproof. And you can hear everything from the trap throwers to the nasty remarks about my shooting. Hey, it was a 28 gauge. Learn more at espamerica.com. All right, so I've been talking a lot about public access, but let's talk about dog training. I was reminded yet again yesterday, it was about halfway up the hill, out behind the house, so about a mile and a half from the place. It's a mix of sagebrush, bitterbrush, which is, by the way, in bloom, P-U, and pine trees. And I'm trying to call Flick back, and I don't scream and yell anymore. I got a whistle for that. So I'm tooting this whistle, and even I can tell that the sound of that whistle is echoing through those trees. Flick is to my right. The echoes are to my left. He goes to the echoes instead of to me. You'd think I would have learned that several years ago on a chucker hunt where I did the same thing against a rock face and watched my dog run the opposite direction. Anyway, acoustics are probably more responsible for mad guys at dumb dogs than you might believe. It's probably not disobedience. It's probably misdirection of the sound of your voice or your whistle. So what do you do about that? Quite often, I will face away from myself and blow my whistle in the opposite direction. So even if the dog does hear an echo, it's coming from beyond me in the same direction. I will also lower the volume on my yell or my whistle. Sometimes, and I'm still working on this, I'll use the tone feature on my electric collar. You can train your dog to obey any kind of command. It doesn't need to be your voice. It doesn't need to be a whistle. Could be a hand signal. Anyway, next time your dog is disobeying you, consider that it may not be him. It may be you and the acoustics of your command. All right. Thank you so much for being loyal listeners. Appreciate that. I'm Scott Linden, your host here at the Upland Nation Podcast. A lot more to come. We're talking public access ground and some strategies. Doing my best to cover all 12 tips, including this one, which also cuts the other way. Start your hunt close to the edges of that area. Safety first, of course. Roads, dogs seldom mix. But there are a lot of hunters who have already beat you to the middle of that place and have hunted the heck out of it. They may not be there now, but they might have pushed those birds out of the middle toward the edges, especially if there's some kind of cover there. Vice versa as well. Start your hunt as deep in that cover as you can get. The old adage that you kill birds not with ammo, but with boot leather is so true, especially if you're the first one in for the day or the first one in for the season, if you're that lucky. Most hunters, frankly, aren't going to work that hard. They'll cover the first quarter mile or so ground from the parking area, and then they're back to their trucks. Hopefully, they'll have pushed those birds further into the middle. And find the marginal cover. You know what I mean. You know, I had this discussion on somebody else's podcast just a few days ago, actually. I'll let you know when that one airs, too. But there's great habitat and there's okay habitat, marginal habitat. And sometimes it is on the margins. It's the, you know, it's the last 40 yards before the road, or it's the what's left of the fence line between two pieces of property, thickets, swampy stuff. A lot of guys will just walk past it because number one, they don't want to walk all the way to it. Number two, they don't think it has any promise. Number three, it doesn't look that good unless somebody pushed birds in there. So give that kind of hinky stuff a look as well, especially if you're not having any luck. Choose the road less traveled. All right, another Facebook comment. This one, I don't know exactly what he means, but you know, I put up a note a day or so ago talking about, hey, I'm going to do a podcast on public access. Do you have any questions? And Marty Thanell says, no questions, just stop advertising it. And while I'm not going to go into detail about that, I hope he's joking. As I've said, if we don't welcome others onto our property and into our sport, we're dead in the water. We've lost half of the hunters in America in the last 20 years. You know, only 4% of Americans hunt these days. Now, most Americans still support hunting for food, but that doesn't pay the bills. You know what pays the bills? You know how we fund wildlife management, from goldfinches to Canada geese? You know the usual stuff: duck stamps, hunting licenses, permits of various sorts. But the biggest funding source is the excise tax that we pay on guns and ammo, bows and arrows. So like I say, if you want to support wildlife, I don't care if you're a vegan, a Buddhist, or a Democrat, buy a freaking gun and then go out and use it. And Marty, that's my answer to you as well. If these people can't find somewhere to hunt, they're not going to buy a gun, and you're not going to have anywhere to hunt in 5 years. Okay, excuse me. There, I got off my soapbox. Back to the good stuff, and finding and exploiting public access ground. I'll talk later about the kinds of places that I like and why, and many of them are, let's just call them waterfowl spots of one sort or another. If they are, you want to be very mindful of the ammo restrictions. That is something that is becoming more and more common. States, feds, both are doing that now. So remember to bring some non-toxic shot. And does anybody out there know what the real rule is? If you got non-toxic shot in your hunting vest, and then you got lead shot too, are you violating the law? I've been told everything in between, from that to if you have lead shot in your locked truck a mile away, you're still in violation of the statute. If anybody out there knows the law for sure, because I haven't gotten a straight answer from anybody official yet. So please clue me in on that. Anyway, carry a box of non-toxic shot just in case you decide to take advantage of some of those places. I got a comment on this actually earlier today, and I'll bring it up now again. Rick Matchin says on Facebook, public access ground, outstanding. Do it in November. And he's absolutely right. One of the things that I've experienced more and more in the last 4 or 5 years than I've ever seen before: how many people just quit hunting at the first hint of crappy weather, or, you know, because they can't get out pre-Christmas or whatever. So instead, hunt the fringes of the calendar. If you can get there early, good on you, except so will everybody else. Hunt the last part of the season, if possible. And if you can't do that, go later in the day. Hunt the fringes of the day. Most people get up at the crack of dawn or whatever it is. There are some states where you can't hunt at the crack of dawn, but they will. And they'll give up by lunch. You know a guy like that, don't you? 12 o'clock is 5 o'clock somewhere. And especially if you're on, you know, kind of the trip of the year and you're celebrating in one or two or six ways, if you know what I mean. So hunt later in the day. Give the cubby birds time to regather for the night, or you might not find any next year. But hunt that golden hour, the last hour of legal shooting time, if at all possible. Be mindful of your dog's health as well. That's the hottest time of the day as well. All right. So, getting to the end of my 12 tips. I hope I hit 12. I'm just about to the end of my list. And I've got some other things, of course, including those places that I want to tell you that you might have your own set of good luck. So hang loose for that, because I've got one more tip and then all of that. Last tip: buy local. You know, in many bird hunting communities, we are economic development. Now, I understand the practical side of things. You want to keep your fuel tank topped off. You want to buy your groceries where you know your way around the grocery store. But when you can, support those communities that support you. Look for the local craft brewer, if nothing else. But every one of those communities, they know you're there, and they know how important it is to have you there. Now, it's only right that we return the favor. Buy some stuff while you're there. Probably costs a little bit more, but I'll spend a dollar extra on my fuel fill-up just to make friends and influence people in the local area. All right, so I promised you some places, and that's good because I also got a comment a while back on another podcast that is apropos here. Scott, you talk about waterfowl production areas. You should emphasize that waterfowl production areas are paid for mostly with duck stamp dollars, and that every hunter should buy one no matter what he hunts. And I bring this up now because one of the places I love to go, because most of the guys who wear orange won't go there, is the WPA, Waterfowl Production Area. I learned this just by sheer chance, exercising flick outside of a small town in a small state several years ago. And I realized that, number one, there wasn't a lot of water there. And number two, there were a lot of sharp-tailed grouse. Since then, whenever I have the chance, I add WPAs to my list. Now, there's all sorts of other great places to do that as well, whether it's a WPA or a wildlife refuge of one sort or another. Many of them do have hunting. We have one, you know, the closest one to me, half of it's a refuge, and the other half is a refuge for us. Non-toxic shot, of course, limited season. Got to be careful about all sorts of other rules, but I never meet another upland hunter there. Be a little considerate. You know, let the camo-clad guys have the first 4 hours of the day, and then head on out with your non-toxic shot. Other places. You know the usual suspects. It's all that walk-in ground. It's all the public land open to sportsman ground that you can get on that those atlases. But those atlases also have a whole bunch of other types of accessible land. Here are some you may not have thought of. That ground administered by the Bureau of Land Management. Mainly yellow on the maps and mainly in the west. How about public schools land? The states, in many cases, will administer that public schools land, and they do it for a bunch of reasons I won't bore you with, but it's also open to hunting. We hunted a place, twice in the last 3 or 4 years, that basically was developed as a reservoir for agriculture and recreation by four counties in Kansas. Yep. They had 150 million bake sales. They taxed themselves, and then they hired a manager. They dug a hole, filled it with water, and now some of the best upland hunting in southwest Kansas is right there. So poke around a little bit and take a look at what's out there. There's a reservoir near the Missouri River Reservoir, Owyhee, O-A-H-E, runs, I was going to say, from Pier North for, I'm afraid to guess, 30, 40 miles, all surrounded by and developed by the Bureau of Reclamation. Take a look at all the colored spots. Don't be intimidated by some of those long-winded acronyms, or worse yet, the full names of those public agencies. Virtually all of them have a mandate to offer up their properties to everybody, including hunters. So if you're looking for some of that public land, do-it-yourself trip information, here are some of the starting points that I truly enjoy. If, like David asked, I got to pick a few, here by state are some of them. Southwest Kansas, just mentioned that. Some of the best places to headquarter. The city of Osborne, city of Dodge City and Jetmore, Goodland County and Colby County. Goodland and Colby, the towns, also have a lot of private land open to hunting. And Kansas gets better and better every year. Now that, of course, is in comparison with the mothership, South Dakota. Highway 37, starting in Mitchell, right off the interstate, on up to Huron, just might pay off for you like it paid off for me. Especially if you kind of look beyond the city limits, and think outside the colored box, if you will. Big Sky, Montana. I don't mean the town Big Sky, because they're a little bit too far west. But there is a lot of public ground. And Montana is probably the best managed walk-in hunting program I've ever experienced. And here's why. In that state, unlike other states, landowners get paid by the hunter visit. So that's why you sign in, or at least you get permission of one sort or another, so that at the end of the year, the landowner takes all those little chits that we drop in the kiosk box and goes to the agency and says, look how many guys I had, give me my check. The only way they get a lot of guys there is if they manage that cover well. So it's kind of a free market capitalist approach to conservation, and it works pretty well. Lewistown is my headquarters, the only place I know of in America where you can drink a beer, look through the floor, and watch a trout stream. Don't neglect Great Falls, especially if you like pheasants and sharptails. I'll probably see you in Montana this season. North Dakota, a sleeper state for a lot of reasons. Get there a little earlier than some of those other states because winter starts, I think, on Halloween there, at least some years. But what it lacks in quantity of private land open to hunters, or even public land, there's a few refuges and a few national grasslands that have paid off for me. Not as much as some states, but the quality is there. There's as many pheasants per square mile, in my opinion at least, in North Dakota as there are in South Dakota. Looking for a place to start? You can't go wrong. Dickinson or Mott, both in the lower left-hand corner, so southwest North Dakota. Great place to go. People are incredible. Say hello to my friends at the Tail Feather Inn in Mott. Had some wonderful times there. And then my own home turf, Eastern Oregon. Yeah, I don't mind. I don't. And if you're a far-thinking, open-minded sportsman, you understand, and I'm not going to give you the lecture again, but here at the Upland Nation Podcast, we're all about inclusivity, including helping people find better chucker and quail hunting on public ground, and mainly public-owned ground in Oregon. Yeah, there's a walk-in program. It's a disaster. Don't ask me to explain, or we'll be here for another whole podcast. But Eastern Oregon has millions of acres of land, primarily owned by the Bureau of Land Management and some of it Forest Service. In fact, if I look out my window right now, I can see the border between Forest Service and BLM land. That's why I moved here. Of course I did. Lots of walk-in access, usually no sort of registration or permission required. It's all your land and my land. Chuckers, valley quail. I've even shot mountain quail in valley quail country. Someday I'll talk about that. Start near Ontario or Burns if you're looking for a place to go for wild chuckers and wild quail in Eastern Oregon. Oh, and this probably holds true for everywhere you go, but especially out there. You are farther from a Starbucks and a hospital than you anywhere else in the lower 48 states. So carry a survival kit. And if you have one of those survival beacons, personal locator beacons, now I don't leave home without one. Word to the wise. All right. So, a little bit more to talk about, and I'll get to that in a moment or two. But there are my 12 tips on public access strategies, access suggestions, some ideas about where to go. I hope they've been of value to you. Hold tight, because we have a little bit more to talk about, but it's coming up right after this brief timeout. At least for you. Put your feet up, because I'm going to tell you a little bit about Gunner Kennels, my dog crate of choice for a whole bunch of reasons. Gunner is the only 5-star crash-tested crate, according to the Center for Pet Safety. It's certified. All other kennels that they've tested since 2015 have failed. Gunner is the only double-wall roto-molded crate on the market. Did I say that right? Roto-molded crate on the market. Double-wall. No wonder it's so safe. And check out their website, gunner.com, for great stories, some incredible, mind-blowing videos on how well their crates are built and how hard it is to destroy them. It's all at gunner.com. And once you've done that and you're looking for training gear, dogtra.com is where you find it. You'll get a 10% discount plus free shipping on anything over $200 if you just use the checkout code SLUN10. SLUN10. Don't forget the bundle deals, a big sale, and some free goodies to go along with all of that stuff. It's all at dogtra.com. All right, as I've said in the past, the sponsors make this all possible. They give us the time and the resources to make this podcast happen. Starting with my own website, findbirdhuntingspots.com, you'll get lots more information like we're talking about today. And one of my favorite places, I'll be there this year, maybe you will too, Huron, South Dakota. 124,000 acres of public access within 60 miles. Learn more and maybe win a shotgun or a Dogtra TNB dual collar at hunthuronsd.com. Finally, espamerica.com. That's where you're going to protect your hearing. Remember, it's hearing loss is cumulative. You can't get it back with any magic potion or voodoo. Protect it while you got it. And if you're scratching your head because you can't understand anything I'm saying, maybe it's too late. But the rest of you, take a look at espamerica.com. And thank you for listening to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, your host. Sure enjoyed talking my head off about public access. Kind of one of my passions, along with bird dogs, wild birds. If you enjoyed the podcast, let me know. I might do more of these, or I might not, depending on what kind of feedback you give me. Do tell your friends. Check the Wing Shooting USA Facebook page and the Upland Nation Facebook page. You can get the entire library of podcasts at uplandnation.com, where you can subscribe, rate, or review each individual podcast. Even though the leash is getting a little longer, many of us are still restricted in one way or another, so make sure you stay in touch. Family, friends, and give your dog a hug too. I'm Scott Linden, wishing you a great week, great evening, an incredible summer. Talk to you again next week. Thanks for listening.